You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back, Tiger fans, to Rock'em Nation's football podcast. I'm Nate Edwards, that's Brandon BK Kylie, and this is Before the Box Score, your annual mailbag edition. We are currently in the middle of baseball starting up, and of course BK being a St. Louis radio guy is all over that. But we're also in the doldrums of quiet football time, at least in Columbia, Missouri. So while other schools are doing their spring practices, Missouri's done. And they're kind of taking a little bit of a break and on vacation, not a whole lot going on. So BK and I looked at each other and said, we have no idea what the hell to talk about. And luckily, we turned it over to you all, and we got some questions to go through today. So BK, how you doing, man? You ready?
I'm doing well. We are 3 weeks away from the NFL draft, so we'll have a little bit to talk about the next time that we are recording with which Mizzou hopefuls are going to be able to hear their name in the draft and which ones could end up latching onto a team and maybe making it as an undrafted free agent. We'll do that next time around. But yeah, like you said, there's really not a whole lot going on right now. So what do? We ask you guys to create our content for us. And thankfully, you did exactly that. So thank you all so much for coming through. We have some awesome questions and I'm looking forward to it.
So I'll kick this off. And this one is from Kevin Free. On Twitter, he is at Free Kevin Free. Kevin wants to know, what all needs to happen for Mizzou to win the SEC East this year? This year, BK, 2022. Huh. What all needs to happen for Mizzou to win the SEC East? Do you know, BK?
So, first of all, if Georgia suddenly gets the death penalty as a program, that would be very helpful in this regard. That would be the first thing that would have to happen. No, in all seriousness, a lot would have to go wrong for Georgia. That's the starting point, because this would be more about Georgia than it would be about Missouri. Now, with that being said, what has to go right for Mizzou to even get themselves into position to be able to win the SEC East? You need one of the quarterbacks to take a massive leap forward and not just be good, but be potentially a star within the division and the conference and maybe, honestly, all of college football. You need that. You would need Luther Burden to be an All-American immediately. You would need somebody on the defensive side of the ball, most likely Tyron Hopper, to become a force of nature at the levels of which we've seen from guys like Sean Witherspoon and Nick Bolton or Sheldon Richardson, where they are just wrecking the game for the opposition from start to finish. All of that stuff. And also you probably need a few other guys to step up and completely outperform what their current expectations are. Like a Nathaniel Pete, for example, if he became the best running back within the division, that would be super helpful to this end. All of that, and also Georgia needs to take a massive step back. If all of that happens, you've got a real shot. Now, even if, like, setting aside, I know that this is not answering that specific question, but I think the more attainable, realistic conversation to have is what needs to happen for Mizzou to finish second within the SEC East. And I think that is a much less convoluted answer. There are fewer things that need to go right in that regard. They weren't that far off last year. I know that sounds crazy to say because in the moment it felt bad. But you look back at a couple of those games, man, you get a bounce that goes in your direction, a call that goes your way, an injury that doesn't take place at the wrong time. You had every opportunity to basically flip spots with Kentucky. I mean, specifically start with that Kentucky game. If that game goes your way, you're 4-4, Kentucky's 4-4, Tennessee's 4-4 in the division. You're basically tied then for second place in the SEC East. So you weren't that far away, even as it was. You were basically a play in overtime away from being 8-4 if you win that Kentucky game and then find a way to beat Boston College. I know that doesn't affect their divisional record, but you're not that far away from where they were last year to being a pretty solid team overall. But that obviously doesn't really help you when it comes to Georgia, who is going to have, like, I think 7 players drafted within the top 50 this year. So, yeah, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, short answer is Missouri just needs to get better. And then the slightly elongated answer is Georgia needs to trip over itself. I did go back, and I didn't look at, like, players or performance to a certain extent, but what did the SEC East look like when the Tigers won it in 2013 and 2014? What did that look like? Well, Missouri, according to SP Plus, was 19.3 points better than the average team in 2013 and 2014. 19.3 points, almost 3 touchdowns better than the average team. Last year, Missouri was a field goal better. Okay. So number one, they need to improve by 16 points better than the average team just to start. And just to give you an idea, the average improvement of a team from year to year is about plus or minus 5 or 6. Obviously there's outliers here and there, but you need to be, you know, about 3 scores better than the average team to even consider making a run at a Power 5 conference division title, let alone the SEC. But look at what the other teams were doing too, because that's the other part of this equation. Wins and losses, it's a zero-sum game. Someone's got to lose so someone else can win. Who were the good teams in 2013? Well, the second-place team was South Carolina, who was actually a smidge better than Missouri that time. They were 19th in SP+. They were 19.8 points better. Georgia was the 7th-best team in the country at 25 points better, but they had all those injuries. They could not get one solid unit on the field at a time. They lost 5 games. And then it was Vanderbilt. Everybody else was terrible. I mean, Vanderbilt was a touchdown better. That was James Franklin's last year. But you had a horribly mismanaged Florida team, a horribly mismanaged Tennessee team, and a Kentucky team in Mark Stoops' first year. Georgia tripped over itself 5 times. South Carolina was good and actually beat Missouri, but lost 1 more game than they should have. And then your only other contender was Vanderbilt, and Missouri smoked them. So what happened in 2014? Well, Georgia got its ish back together, beat the hell out of Missouri, shut them out.
That was a terrible game. One of the worst games I've ever attended at Mizzou.
I was in Vegas. I did not go to that game. I had way more fun than anybody in that stadium. But they lost twice in the conference, just tripped over themselves like Mark Richt teams do. Florida was still under Muschamp, still mismanaged, good, talented, but horribly mismanaged. Same for Tennessee. South Carolina was in the death throes of the Spurrier era. Great game between Missouri and South Carolina in 14. And then Kentucky was just getting itself together at 5-7, gave Missouri a hell of a game, but lost. And then Vanderbilt, this was the first year Derek Mason and LOL. Those were great years. So again, it is a flawed, really good team and a bunch of mismanaged teams. And that's why Missouri won. They were good. They were a very good team, but a lot of other things fell into place. That's not the case anymore. Georgia's like 30 points better than the average team. Last year's Georgia team was one of the top 20 teams ever in SP+. Kentucky is 2 touchdowns better than the average team. Tennessee, 17 points better. Okay, that is a very clear 1-2-3. Florida under Napier is going to get better. South Carolina is recruiting like gamebusters, just like Missouri. Vanderbilt will be Vanderbilt. That's a huge hole to climb out of. But that is 6 teams that are either turning around or way better than they were 7-8 years ago. So what does Missouri need to do to win the SEC East? They need every player to be 3 times better than they were last year and hope that some order of Georgia, Kentucky, and Tennessee lose enough games to open it up for Missouri.
In 2014 is more in the lane yeah. in which this team would do it, because that 2013 Missouri team was genuinely good. Like, that was an excellent college football team. 2014, I don't know that they were actually good.
That,
like, they were fine.
Defense was an all-timer.
Definitely. The defense was excellent, but the offense put up points and you were never quite sure how they did it. And Matty Mock just did the Matty Mock thing from start to finish that year. And the South Carolina game was kind of the perfect example of that, right? You said it was a great game. No. Not going there. Great 2 minutes. Great 2 minutes at the very end. Yeah. The first like 50 minutes of that game were miserable, dude. It was so bad. And then somehow they pulled it out of their you-know-what mm-hmm. with Matty Mock just making a couple of plays. You had Hansbrough getting in at the goal line. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just a weird, weird game that they had no business winning. But ultimately, that's basically what won them the division that year. And you're going to need some of those. Mm-hmm. Like, for Missouri to win the division this year, if they were going to, they're not. It would require a 2014-esque run for them to be able to do it. And they would need Georgia to go through just a wild number of injuries and then lose 2 games that you're like, how in the world did Georgia lose that game? Mm-hmm. Who's their cross divisional? They've got Auburn this year and Mississippi State. Yeah. So if they had like Alabama and trying to think of the other
Texas A&M.
Worst case. Yeah. Like a Texas A&M mm-hmm. that would make things a little easier for Mizzou, but even their cross divisional matchups don't exactly inspire a whole lot of confidence if you're a Missouri fan.
No, no. Georgia is losing everybody almost.
Except for their best defensive lineman, by the way. They're going to have,
true,
I think, 4 guys on the defensive line drafted and 3 linebackers within the top 100 picks or so. Mm-hmm. And their best defensive lineman is back, which is a terrifying thing to say.
But again, they recruit better than any other team of the past 5 years. So, like, there's going to be talent there. Obviously, the Kirby plan, however you feel it is, it works, and it certainly worked last year and has worked before. So it does leave them open at times for close game magic to kind of bite them in the butt. However, it's Georgia and they are just light years better than anybody else. So, yeah.
Also, their quarterback kind of secretly stinks. But
if they roll out Stetson Bennett again, yes. I've heard some good things about the younger guys stepping up, but you got to beat Stetson Bennett. And
heard that one before.
And yeah, and this staff loves them some Stetson Bennett. So yeah, good luck. We'll see. We'll see. BK, your turn. Why don't you pick a question out of the bag?
All right, next one that we'll go to. I kind of like this one. From Ron Davis, at the Ronald Davis. And thanks for listening as always, Ron. Which true freshman do you anticipate seeing the field this year? I'm going to make an amendment on this.
Yes, please.
You are not allowed to say Luther Burden.
Yes, okay.
Luther Burden is not an option for this. But if you were to go with, this is my guy, this freshman will see the field and see it regularly this year, who would you go with?
We're talking true freshman, right?
Correct.
Okay. From the true freshman on the offensive side, the non-Luther Burden category, I want to say Mekhi Miller. I think that there is enough talent in this wide receiver room that you're not going to get just 3 guys hoarding all the snaps. And I really like Mekhi Miller's game. I also like Jamarian Wayne's game, but he's probably going to be playing behind Burden. So I'm going to say Miller for the offensive side. Defense, this kind of goes back to what we usually talk about. Like, when you're looking for breakthrough stars, it's got to be a position of need that doesn't have a lot of returning experience. So Marquise Graciel. Dude was a boss at St. Charles, and he is walking into an interior defensive line room that lost three of its top three guys as far as rotation goes. And Darius Robinson's very good, and Realis George was a good replacement, but the type of talent that he has and hopefully the amount of rotation that this defensive staff wants to do, I fully expect Graciel to have significant snaps throughout the entire season because he's just that good.
He's the correct answer there. Another guy that I would at least give a look to on the defensive side of the ball is DJ Wesolak.
Mm.
I don't know that he will see the field this year. He's got a lot of guys that he's going to have to jump to be able to do so. But he's the kind of bendy, twitchy athlete that they don't really currently have at that spot, where if they wanted some juice coming off of the edge on third down specifically, maybe that's the kind of role that he could carve out for himself. This would probably be something that's more like, hey, let's see what this looks like against some of the lesser opponents on our schedule early in the year. And then he could easily, like, maybe you play him against Louisiana Tech and Abilene Christian, and I understand those aren't like gimmies, but, yeah. You know, that's the best that you got this year for Mizzou. See what he's got early in the schedule, and then if it works, great, and we'll continue giving him more opportunities. If not, you can kind of pull that back, rein him in a little bit, and pull back the playing time. But I do think Graciel is the guy. Mm-hmm. Like, on that side of the ball, that's the one. On the offensive side of the ball, outside of Luther Burden, it's a little more difficult. I like your pick of Miller. I wouldn't be totally stunned if Tavoris Jones ends up carving out a role as the number three running back.
Yeah.
That is a position that typically you can translate easier to the college level. Like, of all of the positions on the offensive side of the ball, a running back you can throw out there, and he could do a pretty good job of being a runner. Maybe he doesn't do well or hold up well in pass protection or some of the route tree concepts that they're trying to do, but as a runner, you should be able to make an impact pretty quickly, so maybe Jones could fit into that mix, and they don't have a clear-cut number three right now. Mm-hmm. Another guy that if I was just throwing out like a, maybe he's got a role because they're kind of light at the position, would be Max Wisner from Lee Summit. He's the tight end. He's 6'6", 240 pounds. He is ready to go when it comes to his size already. Mm-hmm. And they just don't have a whole lot of dudes at that position. Like, they were playing a guy this spring at tight end. Let me look up his name. Kibet?
Chepiator? Yeah.
Who, I'm going to be honest, man, going into the spring, when I watched spring ball, the spring game, I had to look up who this gentleman was. And that's not a shot at him. I just didn't know who he was. And he was getting regular playing time in the spring game. Like, he was a significant contributor in that one. So if Wisner comes in and he's somebody that looks the part, I could see him maybe carving out a role as well as like a number three, number four tight end.
Yeah. Kibet Chepiator was the tight end who was almost hit on the streak route from Brady Cook against Army late in the game.
Yes.
Bounced off the tip of his fingers. That was the only target that he got all year. So I don't know what his role is going to be particularly, but it does speak kind of to the volume of the lack of quality options that have stood out. Obviously, they brought in Tyler Stevens, and then you have a freshman platter of Ryan Horstkamp, the horse, Gavin McKay, and, of course, Max, the freshman from Lee Summit. So, yeah, I from a necessity standpoint, yes, I agree with you. I think you could see the field as well. I really do hope Tavoris Jones, we get to see him this year. I feel like for the past 3 years, we've been waiting for a freshman running back to really establish themselves as a number two. And because we had Larry Rountree and or Tyler Beatty, it just ain't happening. But it has to be the year, right? Like, this has to be the year. There's enough unknowns and/slash new guys to the team that you should really be giving extended looks and playing time to some of these guys. So
yeah, your 1-2 seems pretty clear already. You're going to have Pete as your number one, Young most likely as your change of pace back. Mm-hmm. And then the question is, okay, who are you going with as your number three? And that could change depending on the situation. Sure. It's possible that on short yardage situations, maybe in that spot, you go to Michael Cox. Mm-hmm. 6'1", 235 pounds. That's the dude you put out there. 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1, need a big play. Okay, got it. That's the guy. Mm-hmm. What about the rest of the time? Like, you need Nathaniel Pete is out of gas. Elijah Young, it's not really the situation for him. You're trying to run between the tackles. Mm-hmm. Is that going to be B.J. Harris? Is it going to be Taj Butts? Is Cody Schrader going to get a role in that capacity? Or do you go with Jones there? I think that's kind of what he's fighting for right now.
Yeah. No, I agree. Let's go with... I love these types of questions, so I have to do it. This is from Adam Milton, at Adam_Milton on the Twitter machine. Is there a player in the past 22 years that played for Mizzou that you would bring to the team right now and fill a position? To clarify, this player from the past that you bring in magically would be at the peak of their college career. You bring them in now, 2022, to play for Mizzou right now. Who would it be? BK, I feel like there's only one position to answer this.
I was about to say, can we eliminate the quarterbacks? Because the answer is Chase Daniel.
Chase Daniel or Drew Locke. That's who I would bring in. Yes.
Yeah. I would go Chase Daniel and call it a day because they have so many guys that are yak players at the receiver position right now that I don't necessarily need a guy who is potentially going to also commit some turnovers like we saw with Locke. I need a guy that's just going to get into my playmaker's hands and let him go. And I'm very confident Chase Daniel could get that done. Yeah. But I mean, that is like the answer with a bullet to me.
So non-Chase Daniel division, who would you bring in from the past?
Oh man, that's really interesting. I talked about how they need somebody to take that next step, potentially on the defensive side of the ball, like a Witherspoon or a Bolton. I'll go through some of the names that immediately come to mind, and then we can kind of pare this down. Witherspoon is somebody that I would consider. Big Shell is somebody that I would consider. One of the many defensive ends.
Any of the Smiths?
Yeah. Pick your choice among the defensive ends. One of the Smiths, Gray, Golden, Harris, any of them, whoever your favorite of that group was, go ahead and bring them back. That's under consideration. Macklin would be a guy that you would consider with this group and just throw Burden and Macklin out there and let's have some fun. Mm-hmm. I don't care who your quarterback is. They can't be horrible enough to where they're going to mess that up too bad. A guy like Marcus Murphy being in this backfield or a Henry Josie at the peak of his powers to pair with Pete would be a lot of fun.
Can I throw out EJ Gaines?
That's a good one, yeah, because they could really use a legit just number one
proven corner. Yeah.
That's a good one. Or like Pig, put him on the back end.
Oh, God, yeah. I love our safeties, but he was so good.
Yeah, I mean, somebody that's just a flat-out playmaker on the defensive side of the ball. I think if we're eliminating the quarterback position, as we've kind of talked through this, I think I would go Spoon, man. I would just want to see what Spoon looks like with Hopper at linebacker. I just think that would cause so many issues for opposing teams, especially in this division where you're going up against teams that really want to run it against you. You're probably going to still get crushed by Tennessee, but I don't think there's any one individual player that's going to help you on the back end enough to change that in terms of their passing game and just the quick passing game concepts that they're going to run against you. But this would help you against Auburn. It would help you against Georgia. It would help you a little bit against Florida, South Carolina, all those teams that kind of want to run it up your throat, Arkansas as well. Having a guy like Spoon could change that. And he's also not exactly a liability in pass coverage either. So I think that's my answer.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with Gaines. Pass rusher is an obvious one too for the defense, and man, we've had so many good ones, but I am going to put way more faith in our baby defensive line than maybe I should and say, boy, if we got a number one corner and you can rotate Rake Straw and Drayden Norwood and DJ Jackson, if you can rotate those guys at the two spot and you don't have to worry about it, I'd feel a lot better about the secondary. So I think.
So let's think about it this way, Nate. I like where you're at with that. The number two corner is who? Like DJ Jackson, probably,
right
as
now,
of today?
Yeah.
So think of the gap between DJ Jackson and whoever your favorite corner is. I think it's Gaines over the last 20 years. And then the number two defensive end right now, which is probably Isaiah McGuire. And whoever your favorite defensive end is from the last 20 years. I think the gap's wider at corner. So I think I tend to agree with you there.
Yeah. Man, that would be awesome. The EJ, DJ, CB, lock it down. No fly zone. Yeah, that'd be awesome. What is EJ doing these days? I know he had a cup of coffee in the NFL. I don't know if he...
That's a good question. He was in the league for a while. He carved out a pretty good career for himself with the Bills.
Oh, that's right.
Where is he at now? Let me look this up. EJ Gaines. He has not played in the league since 2020, but he had a pretty long career, man. 2014 through 2020. That's a hell of an NFL career.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did pretty well.
Man. I just always
remember. He opted out of the 2020 season due to COVID.
Yeah.
And he was waived after the season.
I just remember 2013, Texas A&M. He got stuck on Mike Evans every play.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept Mike Evans to a handful of catches and negative yardage. And I was like, damn.
It's one of the most impressive performances by an individual player in a big game that I think I've seen at Mizzou.
Yeah.
It was just, because that was such a huge game. Oh, yeah. Man, such a big game.
Yeah.
All right. Let's continue with this one. Mm-hmm. This one comes from SEC Mike on Twitter at Michael W. Bratton. Biggest question mark that you have for this Mizzou team, other than who will be the starting quarterback leaving spring practice, is what? The biggest question mark that you have for this Missouri team?
For me, it's the defensive line. Because we saw... God, I hope we saw rock bottom last year. I hope that was it. And that was with, you know, three guys who aren't here anymore. I just... There's so much talent, and it's just all... focused on the young kids. And, you know, is Kai Montgomery ready to go? Is Travion Ford going to be a rotational player? Can Marquise Gracio repeat what Wingo did last year when he just comes in as a third guy and it does sees no drop off? You know, and on the edges, you know, Isaiah McGuire and Trajan Jeffcoat play damn near every snap at end. Do we see more rotation there? Do we see more pressure there? In the SEC, really just in college football in general, you got to be able to stop the pass. And that is so much predicated with creating pressure. And I just don't know if Missouri has it yet. I feel confident with the splitting the defensive line coaches up. I feel confident in Blake Baker's previous schemes that he knows how to generate pressure, whether it's with four or with some exotic blitzes. I have confidence in what this staff can do. I just don't know if the players can do it, and that's really going to be the question that needs to be answered as far as concerning, like, does Missouri make a jump in improvement this year, regardless if that's in the win-loss column. That, to me, seems like a key focal point on team improvement.
I like that one. I am a little more concerned about corner, and this is why I liked your pick of EJ Gaines. Than I am about the defensive line. I think they've got enough bodies and enough players at that spot that I'm confident in. Like Isaiah McGuire, I think, took a big step forward last year, especially in the second half of the season. Trajan Jeffcoat is we can differ, not you and me, Nate, but just in general, Mizzou, like the generic you, we can differ on what the ceiling is for him as a player, but he's a good SEC college defensive end at a minimum. Jaden Jernigan has proven at not the SEC level, but the Big 12 level, he's a very good defensive lineman. And Darius Robinson, I think, like, you and me are both on the same page with him. I think he's in for a breakout candidate this year. So I feel like there's enough names there, not to mention any of the young kids, that I think can get the job done. I don't know what corner, man. Yeah. I just don't know. Is Enos Rakestraw going to take that step coming off of a big injury? I hope so. Is Chris Abrams Drain a full-time nickel corner? I think so. Who's going to be that number two cornerback for them this year? We mentioned DJ Jackson. He was solid last year. I don't want to overstate what he was, though, because I specifically remember back to the Arkansas game, and we said this before, Treylon Burks did this against everybody, but eventually you got to be able to make a stop against him, and Missouri really couldn't, and DJ Jackson was a big part of that. So that's probably the one position that holds me back the most. Now, if you were going to be in any division in America where you could have cornerback issues and it not come back to totally haunt you all season long, this is probably the one, just because you don't have a ton of like high flying passing games that you're going to be going up against. But that's coming out of spring ball. I was hoping that they would have somebody that just really emerged as another option opposite Enos Rakestra. I don't know that we really got that. So that would be my answer to this question. And it's interesting and maybe a little bit telling that both of our answers were on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Considering the defense returns way more production than the offense. Now, granted, that's skewed because of a missing quarterback that now currently plays in Bloomington, Indiana. But even so, I think just we have seen offense improvement year over year with what we would consider a replacement level quarterback. And whatever you view of Brady Cook, at least the weapons around him are way, way improved. So you can't help but feel confident even in the face of losing a lot, including Tyler Bailey, who did everything. Just the defense, we haven't seen it, and there's been a lot of rotation, both in the coaching staff and in the players, kind of in and out. So I think it makes a lot of sense, especially after what we saw last year. sorry. I'd say the resident Tiger optimist, Brett Sarver, at bsarver35. Will I ever be happy again, or for the first time, really? I think I've broken him with eat your vegetables. Brett, buddy, yeah, you're going to be happy again. In life, you live in a world with garlic butter. You're going to be just fine. However, as far as Missouri goes, yeah. I mean, look, yes, you play in the SEC. And yes, Missouri sports teams tend to just kick you square in the daddy parts. When you expect it and when you don't expect it. You know, just it's tough. It can't always be bad. So I'm going to say, you know, and maybe in a couple of years, maybe in 10 years, who knows? So don't get too down, Brett. I promise. I'm not trying to bring you down, and I appreciate your optimism. The actual question I will pick out here, because that was a good one. I'm going to smash two of them together. Both Ron Davis, Ronald Davis, who asked the question earlier, and then the Misery Index at Misery Index. Misery said, how confident are you we will finish better than 6-6 in 2022 and why? While Ron was saying, what's the bar for success this year? Because he thinks 8-4 would show this program is healthy and moving in the right direction, which yeah, but do we get there? BK, we'll just kind of smash this together and say, what's your record prediction in April 5th of 2022?
God, this team just has so many unknowns that it's so difficult to assess right now relative to what they've got. Let's go through this together. Mm-hmm. I think Louisiana Tech, in a season in which we all agree Missouri took a step forward, that should be a win.
Yes.
Abilene Christian, same thing. Yes. Now, that's going to be one of those games where it's like, God, why can't Missouri pull away here? It's just the way that it's going to go. Be prepared for it and understand that ahead of time. Kind of North Texas-y. Like, get excited. Vanderbilt should be a win regardless of where Missouri's at. New Mexico State should be a win. That's four that before the season even begins, you should have victories in those games no matter what. Do you agree with all four of those?
Absolutely. Yep.
Are there any others that you would say should be in that category?
Nope.
Okay. We're in agreement there.
Good.
If you're going to take a step forward this year, I think the teams that I would look to as being like, okay, these are your swing games. One, Auburn. Mm-hmm. I don't have a whole lot of good vibes coming out of Auburn right now. And that's the type of game that you hope that you can win, understanding it's on the road. And that ain't going to be easy going down there and getting a win. But you hope that you can get that one if you're going to take a step forward this year as a program. Another one. Kentucky, they've got a real good quarterback, but they are losing quite a bit of talent from the offensive side of the ball in particular, especially along that offensive line. Wandale Robinson, we all saw what he was able to do last year. That's another game that I think it's always a swing game. If you're going to take a step forward as a program, that's one that I would point to as well. The third
one, they lost their OC, didn't they?
Yes, they did, to the Rams.
Yeah.
And that's a big one.
Yeah.
And then you get to, so that's six that we're up to right now. The other games that you could point to in like this next criteria, in my opinion, which is, okay, this would show me a lot. At K-State would be one. Tennessee would be another. Arkansas would be the third. That's kind of where I'm at. And then if you want to throw in Florida into that category as well, you can. So I think you've got to win those four that we said are not gimmies, but just has to happen. Louisiana Tech, Abilene Christian, New Mexico State, and Vanderbilt. Got to win all four of those. The other two that I think if you're going to take a step forward, you probably need to win are Auburn and what was the other one that I threw into that category? Kentucky. And then you've got a bunch of them that are like the non at Tennessee or Georgia games. You probably want to win two of those. And that shows a sizable step forward. But if I was to give a record prediction for, hey, this would show me they're really improving, 7-5, 8-4. I think that's kind of what you're looking for this year.
Okay. I mean, you know, I love the process and I love winning games, but I don't look at the record as far as like, did you actually improve? Obviously that's how you're judged. So
sure.
You know, screw me, but I want to see this team be 7 points better than the average football team, 8 points better, you know, something like that. That would be significant improvement. That would probably mean you win 6 or 7 games. That, to me, that's fine. When you are at this level of rebuild, especially with the way that he is recruiting, I am willing to give you a longer leash and deal with a couple 500 seasons. Now, I know from an optics standpoint, that doesn't look good, especially from a fan interest standpoint. It's real easy to lose a Missouri fan's interest when you lose, especially when you lose, you know, in the first couple weeks. So I get that. But if you win 7 games this year, you know, that would be your first winning record. That you, Eli Drinkwitz, that would be your first winning record at Missouri. To me, that's all I need. You know, get to 6-6 or 7-5, you know, get to the bowl game and either lose it if you have 7 wins or win it if you have 6, like whatever. Get to 7 wins. That is it for me. What I hate about this schedule, and I wrote about this 2 weeks ago, is that all of your toss-ups, well, 3 of your 4 toss-ups are on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 of them are in the first 4 weeks. So for now, like the summer and August are so important for this team to get its stuff together. You get a warm-up against a Louisiana Tech team that's got a brand new coaching staff and was pretty bad last year. And then you immediately go 4 hours to the west to Manhattan, Kansas. And that's going to say a lot. Whether you, it's true or not, that is going to be a statement on this season, much like Kentucky was last year. Mm-hmm. You got toss up, second game of the week or the year, boom. Do you win it or do you lose it? That was also on the road, by the way. They lost it. And whatever happened afterwards, like it was just, okay. We suck again. You know, it was a close game, but you lost it. So Kansas State, Auburn, South Carolina, Arkansas are kind of your projected toss-ups, and 3 of those 4 are on the road. Kansas State's week 2, Auburn's week 4, South Carolina's week 9, and then Arkansas on Black Friday. So that sucks. You're going to be underdogs against Georgia, at Florida. You're probably going to be an underdog against Kentucky, even all things considered, and then at Tennessee after the way they smacked us around last year. So, you know, you can write those games off if you want or whatever, but it's 4 favored, 4 toss-ups, 4 underdogs. And, you know, you got to win 2 in the toss-up or the underdog category and not screw up the favorite to win. So 6 wins is on the table. There's a very clear roadmap for that. Getting to 6, it's about the hardest way you could do it unless you pull off a huge upset, which could happen, but this is a young team with, you know, with a quarterback question, and that's just a tough ask.
Yeah, you mentioned last year, Kentucky in week 2. It goes back even further than that, right? Like 2019, Wyoming week 1. 2018, South Carolina week 5. Missouri came into that one 3-1, and then we all kind of knew, oh, okay, maybe not quite the team that we expected it to be, and then I think they lost to like Alabama the following week. Mm-hmm. 2017, you had South Carolina and Purdue weeks 2 and 3.
Oh my God.
You knew after that exactly what the season was going to be like. 2016, you started out the season with West Virginia. And that might be the closest comp for this Kansas State team. This K-State team is probably slightly better than what that West Virginia team was. But I think that was also kind of a, okay, what do we have here? That was the first year of Barry Odom. Nobody really knew what to expect out of Mizzou. It was the first full season of Drew Locke as the starter. And there was just a whole lot of newness about that team. Transfers all over, all kinds of stuff. And then you left the game and you're like, oh, okay, cool. This is what we're kind of working with here. Not a whole lot of offense. Just a weird team overall. So I think that's kind of how we're going to find out about Missouri this season. Again, a whole lot of newness about this team. Got a new quarterback, got new weapons on the outside. And are you going to learn about them in week one? Sure, of course you are. But week two against K-State is when you really find out kind of what the mettle of this team is. Mm-hmm. All right. Final question for you.
I hear it.
Another one from Ron Davis. What are your top candidates from the 2021 recruiting class to break out this season?
Let's review 2021 real quick.
Sure.
That'd be Kai Montgomery, Tyler Bacon, Travion Ford, Dalen Carnell, Dominic Lovett, Taj Butts, Artem Walker, Zachary Lovett, Tyler Hibbler, BJ Harris, The Horse, Connor Tolleson,
Jadarius Perkins.
Notice I didn't say Jamarian Gooch or even Mekhi Wingo. DJ Jackson, Jonathan Jones, Rialis George.
Snoop Reeves is gone already.
I don't want to talk about that.
Sistrunk's gone, right?
No, Sistrunk's is still here.
He's still there?
Yeah. Okay. Pretty sure. Hold on. Yeah, Sistrunk's still here. 34.
Okay. I mixed him up with Reeves. I've got my candidate. You want me to go first?
Yeah, let me hear it.
I'm excited for Dominic Lovett. The spring game got me really excited about what he can be. And maybe more importantly, how Missouri's going to utilize him. I think last year they made a mistake. I think they wanted him to be something that he wasn't. Dominic Lovett is not an all-around, complete receiver. He is not a guy that is going to go out there and run the entire route tree. And that's okay. Neither was Treylon Burks. Treylon Burks was a guy that you were going to utilize as a gadget player. Sometimes he would basically be a running back lining up in the slot. Other times he would just run a go. And we saw this how many times, specifically in this Missouri game. He was a guy that was just a weapon. You can utilize Dominic Lovett that way. Now, they're different. Dominic Lovett's 185 pounds soaking wet. Treylon Burks was by the end of the year, I think there were reports he was 240 pounds playing receiver. So they are very different stylistically in how they are made up as players. But they kind of win the same way. So if they're going to utilize Dominic Lovett that way, and they're going to go into the season just saying, okay, he's going to be our slash guy. He's going to line up in the slot. He's going to be a guy that we use on some of these in around the orbit motions, the jet sweeps, all of that stuff. And then we're going to get him the ball on screens and we're going to try to get him on some deep overs and that kind of stuff. I'm here for that, man. So I think Dominic Lovett would be my pick this year as the breakout candidate from the 2021 class.
I'll tell you who I want it to be. I want it to be Kai Montgomery.
Yeah.
But I don't know where he's going to play. Is he inside? Is he outside? Is he both? Did he recover from his injury? Is he okay? I don't know.
He's basically the same size as Trajan Jeffcoat.
Trajan 6'4", 277. Kai is 6'3", 275. Yep, basically the same and shorter.
But he carries the weight a little differently.
He does.
I feel like he's Montgomery beefy. Looks like a defensive tackle.
Yes, he does. Yes, he
and
does.
And he feels like he could win on the interior, but I don't know. He's bigger than Jaden Jernigan, but it's just a matter of how you can win. And I think Montgomery's best chance to do so is probably in the interior.
I think so too. I really do. Especially since it's a little thinner there. At least from an experience standpoint. So I want it to be him, but I don't think that's my answer.
Okay.
I also want it to be Taj Butts. But my God, there is a guy who's the same size and got all of his carries last year by the name of Michael Cox.
Mm-hmm.
Taj Butts didn't even earn his number by the time we hit fall camp, the end of fall camp. So I think some of that was he was misproportioned. I think he was a little heavier than they wanted him to be. He cut a lot of weight this offseason. So I think he's on the right track, but I don't think it is because I know who's going to be seeing the field over him. I liked Artem Walker with what we saw. Obviously, I love our pony boy, the horse. But from a breakout standpoint, no horse. You're going to be blocking your ass off. I'm not going to see, SportsCenter top 10 blocks. Okay. I'm sorry. That's not going to be it.
Come on, man. He can go up and get it.
That horse can run free all day, baby. So here's what I'm going to say. I want to say it's going to be Dalen Carnell.
Oh, okay.
Blake Baker's 425. They were talking about this, I don't even remember, a couple weeks ago. I think they're talking to Chris Abrams-Drame, and they're talking about the Baker defense. And he said, yeah, basically the difference between the 425 that Wilkes was running and the 425 that Baker's running is that Wilkes used the five, the five defensive secondary, he used a nickelback, a slot corner as the fifth. Blake Baker is using the five as a slot safety, right? Just a third utility safety. And yes, the secondary was banged up and there's a lot of injuries, but who made the most of that opportunity in the spring? Dalen Carnell did. And we saw it in the black and gold game, two interceptions. So it's a crowded depth chart. The two slots for the safeties are probably going to be spoken for, but this is a four-star kid who came in as a corner, has worked his way into safety, got a lot of playing time at safety. And while Drinkwitz did cite like his need to improve on the running game, he had nothing but praise for his ability to play the pass. And, you know, for a kind of your fifth defensive back, you're basically going to be covering a guy, and obviously need to be able to hit, but like, I like what I saw so far. So just to be a little bit different from you, because I do like the Dominic Lovett pick, and just kind of reading the tea leaves from what I've seen in the spring, I'm going to go with Dalen Carnell.
Final thing to add to this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should also give a quick shout out to Connor Tolleson, since we didn't mention him previously.
That's true.
He would be my backup answer. Like I'm pretty confident Dominic Lovett at a minimum is going to play a lot and he'll get some opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that same level of confidence about Connor Tolleson, but I think it might happen. And if it does, I think he's got a chance to be a really good player for Mizzou.
So Tristan Colon Castillo became Missouri's starting center in 2017. And he wore number 55. And then he declared early for the NFL draft, and Eli Drinkwitz brought in his good friend, Jersey Mike Maietti. Mike wore number 55.
Huh.
Mike graduated. He's going into the NFL. Who got number 55? Well, that's Mr. Connor Tolleson. Now there's another Jersey friend named Vince Polgar, who's brought in conceivably to be the starting center. He was from Buffalo last year. He was a center for the Bulls. And certainly that's why they brought him in. But you didn't hear a lot about Vince Polgar in the spring, and you did hear a lot about Connor Tolleson in the spring, and he's wearing number 55. I'm just saying there seems to be a lot of stars connecting here. That's all.
And the upside on Tolleson is way higher than the upside of Polgar. Like, Polgar might be a really solid player. I watched him at Buffalo, and I liked what I saw. He was just really solid. Nothing spectacular about his game at all, and that is not meant to demean him and what he does on the field. He's fine. He's a really solid center, and if he is your starting center, you'll be okay. But if you're looking for more upside, it sure seems like the coaching staff feels that Connor Tolleson can provide that.
Yeah, I agree. I cannot let this go. Will at Will Nix 3 on Twitter. Will KU ever be punished for their countless misdeeds? Will, I'm still waiting on Kansas to pay for their misdeeds in the Civil War, man. Right? When those Jayhawkers rode up and down Missouri-Kansas border, murdering Missouri families for the audacity to live on the Missouri side, yeah, it ain't coming. All right? Those a-holes on the West, they've been cheating their asses off as long as Kansas has been a state. It ain't coming. So, we're just going to have to live in a world where justice escapes us, and their football team always sucks, and we're just gonna have to take solace from that. That's
and where Christian Brown on a national stage becomes a hero to some. I couldn't be me. I would never root for that team just because of that.
Stupid fake birds. I think that's all we got. Thank you for your questions. These were some good ones. I you never know what to expect in these things. You guys got some good content coming through. I feel good about doing this again, BK. Not next time, but like I think we got some smart readers, man. What do you think?
Yeah, a month from now when we no longer have anything to talk about once again, because we have gone through the NFL draft, and at that point in time, there's not really a whole lot to react to because you're not really into the recruiting season just yet, which really starts back up around early June, for all intents and purposes. Yeah, we'll get back to another potential mailbag. Hopefully you guys have some more questions at that point in time. I would assume at that point, actually, maybe I'm wrong on this. I think we'll probably have an answer on the quarterback situation potentially by then. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah. JT Daniels graduates from Georgia in May. So, that's probably going to be when he makes his decision. So, we'll see. But yeah, that's going to be our show for today. Again, thank you for the questions. They were great. You all were great. We will do this again sometime soon. As always, we appreciate the downloads and the subscriptions. Leave a comment or rate us. We love all types of feedback from you all. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Nate G. Edwards. He's at BK Sports Talk. That's where we get our questions. And of course, you can follow the Rock'em Flagship at Rock'em Nation. We appreciate you tuning in this time. We'll try to do better next time. And until then, M-I-Z.
Z-O-U.